welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Cecilia Velasquez. She is the author of the recently published book, Traces of Bliss. In this book, unique Amazonian massage oil tricks euphoric ancestral memories of five senior citizens as they recall events of their medieval Spanish ancestors, and we will be talking about these triggers, ancestral memories, and much more. But before we talk to Cecilia, I want you to know a little bit about her. Cecilia was born in Quito, Ecuador, where she spent her childhood. She was raised in California and France and has traveled extensively to over 50 countries. She received her graduate degree from the University of Southern California and speaks four languages. She serves as a board of directors in several cultural and educational organizations and was nominated for the Arts Orange County Award. She lives with her family in Dana Point, California. She is the author of the novels Gathering the Indigo Maidens and the newly one, the one we're going to be talking about today, Traces of Bliss. Hi, Cecilia.
Good morning, Irene.
Good morning. Well, this is going to be so much fun talking to you because a lot of the things that are in your book are some of my favorite topics, so, and I'm sure that the listening audience will also find it very entertaining, too. Traces of bliss. Wow. What is bliss? That's always a big question.
It is, and it's a wonderful word because it can refer to so many things.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
But the way that I wanted to talk about in this book is it would refer to a feeling of elation.
Uh-huh.
That is triggered by a particular massage oil. So I really narrowed it down to that particular meaning.
You mentioned massage oil. You know, it's interesting because a good massage therapist quite often uses essential oils, and there are so many great properties in these oils. Is there a particular one that you were using in the book?
Yes, I really did single one that is in some ways very universal so that readers anywhere could associate with that scent because, as you know, that scent is one of the most difficult things to describe in a novel unless you have a common element that you can use. So therefore, I just simply used verbena, lemon verbena, which all cultures are familiar with. Or just the fact that you say lemon, verbena, lemon, again, it's very universal. And if you're not familiar with verbena, well, you can more or less imagine something very fresh, something very calming, something that lemon scent is really one of the most pleasant scents to most people. And most people are not allergic to lemon.
You know, that's right. Exactly. And as you say, it's very refreshing. And people do love the smell. In fact, as you were talking, I spilt my arm because this morning when I showered, I used lemon gel and lemon lotion. And, well, lemon verbena, actually, it was. And it's, like, interesting. Here we are talking about this today. So this particular massage therapist that you talk about used this oil. Did she have intentions of bringing up what did come up for these people?
No. She is a young massage therapist. She is the protagonist, and her name is Claire.
Uh-huh.
She didn't meet, all she wanted to do was to help her elderly clients because as they share various things with her while she massages them, she really wants to comfort them. She herself has gone through some very sad events in her life. And she shares this with her elderly grandmother, who is actually a healer, a natural healer, originally from Ecuador.
Uh-huh.
And it's her grandmother, with the assistance of another person, who blends this special verbena oil. So it's not just simply lemon verbena, but she adds other elements of some things that, maybe are suspicious, elements of maybe hallucinogenic mushrooms in there.
Uh-huh.
And so we have a concoction that her grandmother blends in order for Claire to really help her elderly, very elderly patients.
Now, I understand that this oil also brings up some blissful memories. Let's talk about that and how actually the properties in this oil could do that. I mean, you know, maybe some of our listeners are thinking, well, how could the scent bring up memories?
Exactly. And, you know, I think it's actually very easy for people to imagine remembering something based on a scent from your past.
Mm-hmm.
And it was as simple as that, that I was thinking, well, what if you smell a particular thing from your childhood? It could be a peppermint. Perhaps that brings, you know, good memories of playing in a playground. What if it's a particular type of tea that you were served as a child, or you smelled in your home maybe when someone was ill? So in that case, maybe elements of smelling or chamomile tea are not positive to you. So again, it was that whole thing of sensory triggers.
Mm-hmm.
Do they trigger good things, which is wonderful, or could they trigger some darker elements?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why scent or the olfactory elements are so important in this novel, and what made it difficult to write, because you do want the reader to be able to imagine these memories coming up in their own lives. It becomes a very personal thing, not just reading about these characters, but the reader has to imagine things that they might be able to recall that were not necessarily that positive based on a smell that triggered it.
Let's talk about that, about smells triggering. What really happens? Now, I know the olfactory system gets tired out very soon, very rapidly. And this is why we, you know, when we go into a room, we smell something for just a few seconds, and then it's gone. So it has to be in that immediate few seconds that we smell it.
Yes.
The trigger has to happen.
Exactly. But I think in this particular case, Claire, being a masseuse,
mm-hmm.
then we add other elements of touch. So not only is the scent, like you're saying, that immediate trigger,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but then it continues because she is massaging them. So now you have touch.
That's right. And some of the touch, it could be the trigger points that she triggers. In other words, you know, if she happens to go into a trigger point that will bring up a memory, that, of course, will be enhanced.
Exactly. Exactly, and then this is where fiction comes in, and you ask your reader to really believe in the story. So, you know, people from that point will either say, yeah, that can happen, that's happened to me in a particular
mm-hmm,
situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and certainly if you recall perhaps holding a child's hand or you know, bathing your own child, all of a sudden you go, oh, yes, I remember.
Mm-hmm,
you know, I remember
mm-hmm.
all these things when you were scrubbing your child or putting shampoo and it smelled this particular way, and, you know, the splashing sound in the water. So it really is, it was not, once you trigger those memories for your reader, their own personal dreams or memories, then I think it was easy for a reader to buy the story.
Exactly. And then, you know, you had mentioned something just a few minutes ago that, you know, in comes fiction. And then in my mind, when you said that, is it really fiction? You know, it's maybe a story that you had made up, but I think someplace along the line, every aspect of the memory, somebody will relate to it.
Well, I certainly hope so. I think so, and obviously with people that have read the book, that's everyone has shared a story with me, and I think...
Yep, I'm in doubt it.
That's been the fun part, because I realize now, you know, when I speak about the novel at various groups, that I do either two things. I have to really limit the question and answer, because every single person wants to share, and I mean very with lots of energy or with a lot of sincerity.
Sure.
Stories about a memory that was triggered by one of the senses, and certainly the sense of smell was the one that most people do recall.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
For the most part, there have been very good memories that people want to share. But sometimes, you know, people get a little too emotional, and so I have to be cautious about that.
I understand. Let's talk about ancestral memories.
Okay.
And I know that you've done, you know, some research that's actually is in your book. So tell me about ancestral memories.
Well, you know, even the term ancestral memories is really weighed with a lot of controversy, because in modern science, this is something that is not accepted anymore. I think a couple of centuries ago, the thought that that humans pass on characteristics of memory, characteristics from their own lifetime onto their offsprings was one particular thought. But I think modern biology in epigenetics, of which I am not a biologist, but I know that this whole notion would be very much poo-pooed by the scientific world. And yet, everyone knows that they have memories of which they really can't describe from their own personal experience. So I took off on this novel on the thought that maybe science really hasn't caught up with some of the things that everyone has experienced. You know, they're in the process of trying to define whether that's even possible through DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So ancestral memories, I think everyone has an idea of what that could mean. And again, I like that because when I use that word, people say, oh, yeah, everyone has it defined their own way. And I think that's good because that's where fiction could make someone really think about it. And science, as I said, is really not, would not really approve of that term at this point.
Well, science may not, but then there's reality and, you know, research, which I know you've done. We'll talk a little bit about genealogy here shortly. But, you know, I'm thinking of myself talking, you know, I have a daughter, I have a mother, I had a grandmother. And so there's just a lot of things that it seems that is passed down, and it's like you know it.
Exactly.
It's, you know, it's unspoken. The other thing, too, that is current now are imprints that are passed down, and those are the, you know, they could be through the family, they could be through environment, they could be through culture. And so I think that maybe, and I know that that is a term that's starting to be used in the psychological realm as imprints, which is probably pretty much the same as this ancestral memories.
You know, I think so, but I certainly in terms of fiction and in terms of dealing with emotions and triggering a particular acceptance from your reader, I think it was just important to say that this particular situation that was happening with my characters is something that you, reader, might also be familiar with.
Uh-huh.
So although I have the charlatan, the adversarial character, you know, really go on into all these sort of pseudoscience descriptions of collective memory, I think the reader understands that we don't really know. Science is not really approving of this, but yet everyone has a story or everyone has felt something from the past that they can accept this notion that we don't know enough about ancestral memory. It could be, like you're saying, an imprint. It could be a trace of some kind of genetic code but we don't know. And really, it's really not that relevant to the story because it's about, you know, the actions and the feelings that the characters express and the way the plot evolves that really hooks people into just accepting that it is an ancestral memory that these individuals are experiencing, and they don't know how to deal with it, but they know they really want to feel that bliss of remembering these actions that they themselves didn't experience, but somehow that is triggering these thoughts in their brain, and they want to re-experience, they want to reenact these memories.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through Direct Podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Cecilia Valsdaghi, and as you've heard so far, this has been really interesting, hasn't it? But stay tuned because there's just so much more. So the memory comes back, or if it was there, or if it's passed down or whatever. And so what is the purpose of that memory besides getting the bliss? You know, you mentioned bliss, but I'm just wondering if there's something a little bit deeper there.
Well, I sure hope so. Because, and the reason why I selected to make the characters, the five seniors, exactly seniors, because I felt that as one gets older, I posit that as one gets older, it's a confluence of your own memories, your own wisdom, your own maybe a type of evolution that happens as you're getting older. All these other things, we assume that everything really is dying, but maybe there's something that's really evolving that you can have these visions, if you will, that are going to help you understand your own space in this line of your own ancestors and where you might be going. But these are the things that could be happening to elderly people that we don't know yet.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm thinking, you know, I guess if I'm on Medicare, that means I'm elderly, and I'm thinking about myself. Gosh, am I in that realm? You know, my head is just buzzing as you're talking. So you've done a little bit of genealogical research, I understand, too, when you were doing this book.
Absolutely, and really that's what triggered it for me. Because I've had the good fortune to have very elderly relatives in my family, so that I recall my my mother's great aunts coming over and speaking, and they're very articulate women, big talkers in my family. So, you know, as a child, I remember talking to my aunts who were probably 90, so that means they were born in the 1800s.
Right.
And they had amazing, amazing stories of which, you know, I can't say that I recall every story, but that's what triggered it. You know, these things that my aunts would say, and therefore I've always been interested in genealogy, you know, looking it up, researching my particular individual genealogy. And that then led me to a lot of history, because so much of that you really have to understand what was happening in that particular society, and of course that took me back to Spain, and the amazing records that were kept for centuries, you know, primarily by the Catholic Church, not only baptismal records, birth records, and so forth, but in the context of what was happening in a particular region. That took me to the Basque region and of Spain, which is in northern Spain, it borders France. Again, that area there, the people have believe that they have been there since, you know, prehistoric times, and some of their particular traits, you know, their blood, they have a lot of Rh negative blood. There's other elements there that really validates their beliefs that they have been there for all without moving. So that led me to think, gosh, going back to we're going back to caveman. And so that was great. Obviously, you don't have records. That's the other thing in genealogy. You can only really validate what you're saying if you have the records. But once you're going back that far, you really have to kind of understand some of the larger historical things that were happening there. So I picked on the Basque witch trials. And so that, again, helped me to anchor the story into something that is believable for my readers, you know, saying this is what was happening here. These people were hiding in these prehistoric caves. So we can't really say that there's a direct link between this character and the prehistoric caves, but it's reasonable to believe that their ancestors were, in fact, you know, going back and hiding in these caves. So, you know, again, you ask your reader to believe it, because hopefully you've taken them step by step into believing that that's a possibility.
Exactly. And I myself had done some research, and I love it, because things that you dig up, and especially what I found, that there was some hidden secrets that all of a sudden came up, and it's like, oh, the family didn't talk about this. Now, this is, of course, more recent. And did you find that, too?
You know, I did, but I think our family was the opposite. We talked too much.
Oh, so you knew all the secrets, and it's like, oh, no, don't talk about them.
You know, for me, it was more like proving some of the secrets. And honestly, in a true scientific or genealogical, you really can't, because you really don't know after a certain point where, in fact, if in fact you follow that particular line.
Yeah, yeah.
So familial line.
Yeah.
So at that point is when I decided, and I spent a lot of time in these archival records, and it's not something that you just can go in and say, can I look? You know, there's a whole process. You have to fill an application, then you have to make a particular appointment for a particular time. So once I realized that I really would not be able to with certainty say this was my direct ancestor, but more than likely. So and I think that's why people are so intrigued by genealogical research, because it gives you it opens a window.
Yes. Yes.
Wow, isn't that interesting? And my relatives did this, or my ancestors came from a particular place. You know, why did they come? Was it a famine? Was it this? Was it a personal issue that, especially here in the United States, we're all from our ancestors, I should say, are from many, many places.
Exactly.
It really it can lead to some very interesting ideas about why your relative came, and also it gives you the sense that you are passing that on also to your children, the story of your family.
And that's,
so that's
important.
Intriguing.
Yeah, and that's important. I think, you know, just the whole aspect of traces of bliss, to me, that's what it is. It's pulling out the stories and
yes,
hopefully passing them on.
Exactly, exactly. And I think all these stories, the way that I decided to do in this particular novel is to really tie them into a lot of historical facts. And I do let the reader know these are the facts, and you can just go right back, you know, to the afterword and see who were the real characters, or you can wait until you finish the novel who were these based on, what incidents were really true.
Yeah.
And that's what came in for me, because, you know, you've done, you know, 30 years of research, a lot of reading on history, and to try to condense it to a few characters that are intriguing enough but are small enough. You know, I chose not to have any historical characters that, you know, a king or a queen or something, because then it doesn't seem believable. These were minor characters in history, but somehow managed to be known in the history books or in a particular story. And I think that's what makes it believable for people, because like you said, you know, maybe you found out things that people didn't tell you about, but if you looked at it in the context of what was happening in society during that particular time of the secret, it kind of makes sense. You know, a lot of us, you know, maybe you don't want to reveal everything about what happened in your life, but it's happening to other people at that time in that society.
As well, exactly. So you've had some success with Traces of Bliss. Tell us about it.
You know, I'm very, very pleased, because it was recently selected by the Association of American Publishers in conjunction with a national organization known as Las Comadres. And the full title of the acknowledgement that I received is the 2012 Las Comadres and Friends National Latino Book Club.
Wow.
So, Traces of Bliss is the June entry, so all its members, and there are 16,000 members, I've heard 18,000. I would love if even if 1% of them would buy the book.
No kidding.
I'd be happy. And so it really is a huge honor, and it's, I think, because, of course, I discuss many aspects of the Hispanic experience. Again, going back to the roots of our ancestors, which are in Spain, in the Iberian Peninsula. And, you know, and I speak about the different religions that have lived in Spain or lived in Spain, and because of that somehow ended up in Latin America, which then ended up in North America. So I think that's what kind of made it one of the novels that they selected.
Well, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
All that work, and it's paid off, hasn't it?
It really has.
It's a real honor.
It's been fun.
Uh-huh.
It was a fun book to write. It was a challenging book, because I wanted, like you were saying earlier, to try to talk about ancestral memories, but in such a way that it was believable to people.
Exactly. Cecilia, your website address, so that our listeners can go to it and find out more about you and the books.
Thank you. Well, the easiest one is, of course, www.tracesofbliss.com, or my author's website, and my name is such a tongue twister, so I think the best thing is to just go to www.tracesofbliss.com.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Well, listeners, tracesofbliss.com is the title of the book. And gosh, Cecilia, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure talking to you again. And this is an intriguing book. And what really I find just by listening to you also is the fact that, sure, it's fiction, but gosh, the reader can just get right to it, and so many places it'll trigger our own memories as a reader.
I hope so. Thank you so much, Irene.
And thank you. And listeners, we've been talking to Cecilia Velascotti, and she is the author of Traces of Bliss. Do check her out on her website, as we had just said, tracesofbliss.com. And this is a really great book, so do check it out. Thanks for listening. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live.